I got married, got together because of a mission trip. We were at the same college together for 3 years. It was a small Baptist college, and we didn't know each other. We were in basically the same degree program, which was an even smaller group of people. But my senior year and her junior year, we went on a mission trip together to Mexico, and we met because of this trip. And both of us were called to missions individually, separately. And much like the first lady that we talked about, that Steve talked about, we were in the process to go overseas. We were assigned to an area in India and had some health issues come up that kept us from going. And so missions has always been part of our heart. It's always been something that we've been drawn to and encouraging people to take part in. Because let me tell you, giving is great. But when you experience worship in a different culture, it changes you. It changes everything about the way you know God. Because most of us know God in English. Most of us know God in our set pew on Sunday morning at 10:30. But when you get somewhere where God is in a different language and you hear them worshiping, maybe it's even the same songs, but there's just something about hearing it in a different language that challenges your heart. And it changes for you how big God is. And that's an experience that I would love for everyone to have. I know Pastor David, he was here for 14 years, was very big on missions. I as well am very big on missions. It's important to get outside of your bubble, to see the way that God is working in the world. Because God works in mysterious ways, and sometimes we get too used to the mysterious ways God works with us, right? But when you get somewhere else and you see the way God is working in ways that don't quite make sense to you, it's a challenge, and it makes God that much bigger and better to your heart. So that's my plug for giving to missions and being involved in the missions of the church and of the American Baptist churches. Today, I want to start off by telling you a story. And I hope that this is a story that you're all very familiar with. Because this is a story that is foundational to our faith. I'm not going to start with a year because we don't know what year this happened. But Joseph, Abraham's great-grandson, was sold into slavery, and he ends up in Egypt. And he ends up in prison in Egypt. And he interprets dreams for several people while he's in prison. And the Pharaoh has a dream. And Joseph is called to interpret this dream for the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh makes him his right-hand man. So from being sold into slavery by your brothers to being the right-hand man of essentially the most powerful person in the world is a story in and of itself, but that's not the story I want to completely tell to you today. Joseph, in this position, was able to prepare the people of Egypt for a famine that was coming that would last for 7 years. Well, his family is hit by this famine. And they come down to Egypt for food. And they go back home. And then they come back. And then they stay in Egypt. And years pass. Generations pass. And the pharaohs that knew Joseph die out. And the people that are Abraham's descendants multiply to the point that they're very numerous. And the Pharaohs, well, they're scared of these people because they could start an uprising. They don't have control of these people. So what do they do? What do you do whenever you don't have control? You assert power and dominance. That's what people do. I hope you don't, but people generally do. The Pharaohs enslave Abraham's descendants, Joseph's descendants, and they're put into slavery because they're so numerous and they're afraid of them. Well, more years pass, more generations pass, and along comes a man. Now, this man was not born a man. He was born a baby, like most of us. And he was born at a time when the Pharaoh had outlawed the birth of any Hebrew children. So his mother puts him in a basket and floats him down the river and tells his sister to watch. And who should find him but the Pharaoh's daughter? This baby is brought to the palace and raised by the Pharaoh's daughter. Now, most of you know who I'm talking about. Who is it? Moses, absolutely. Well, Moses is raised in the Pharaoh's household for 40 years. Relates to the people of Israel as a member of Pharaoh's household. And then he finds out that he is actually a Hebrew. And he sees the way that the foreman, the slave drivers, are treating one of his fellow Hebrews. And he kills that foreman. And he runs for his life. So at 40 years old, I'm 42. I can't imagine being the age I am and just finding out I'm related to this whole group of other people that have been enslaved for years. And then I kill somebody and have to run away. Well, he runs away to the desert, meets a man whose name just escaped me, Jethro. Jethro. Melissa helped a little bit. Jethro was a priest in Midian, but he was a priest of God Most High. And Jethro introduces Moses to worship of God. Moses marries Jethro's daughter. And then after 40 years of living with them, he gets called to go back to Egypt. And when he goes back to Egypt, what happens? I know you know this story. You get the 10 plagues. You get Moses telling Pharaoh, "Let my people go." How many of you have seen the Charlton Heston Moses movie? Yeah, that's a classic. How many of you have seen The Prince of Egypt? You need to watch The Prince of Egypt. It's animated, but it is oh so good. It's a fantastic movie. They sing some songs in there. It's a really good movie. But Moses goes back and he tells the Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says no 9 times. And then comes the plague of the death of the firstborn. Moses tells the people of Israel to paint lamb's blood on their door frames to keep the angel of death away from their houses. He doesn't tell Pharaoh to do this, and Pharaoh's firstborn son dies. And this is the final straw, or at least we think it is. And he tells Moses to take his people, take what they need and go. So Moses has, at 80-something years old, has come back, and he has led the people of Israel, the Hebrew people, who had been slaves for generations, out of Egypt. Now you know the story. They travel for a little while, and they come to a sea. Now the translation in Scripture is the Sea of Reeds. It's often said it's the Red Sea. I don't know exactly which sea this is. But the sea is in their way. And Pharaoh changes his mind. And he tells them, he tells his army, go capture them and bring them back. And the Pharaoh's army is coming. And Moses and the people are at the sea. And Moses prays to God, and God parts the sea. The people walk through on dry land, and Moses' army gets caught in the middle of the sea when it crashes down on top of them. So the people of Israel have witnessed multiple miracles. Miracles that are impossible to explain. They get to the other side, and Moses, well, he takes them to Mount Sinai and gets them the Ten Commandments and all of the other laws. And there's this sort of circular thing going on where Moses gets laws and the people are waiting and they start to worship other gods. And Moses comes down with the laws and he gets upset and the has to rebuke the people, and then he goes back and he gets more laws because God is saying these people aren't worshiping me right, and so God gives more and more laws because the people screw up more and more times, and this happens over and over and over again. And we sort of see the same thing happening in Judges where the people are just not faithful. Well, in that process, God is still providing for them. God is providing for his people even when they are unfaithful. And how often can we say that? God has been faithful to me even when I have been unfaithful. Well, God does things for them. He provides quail for them to eat. He provides manna for them to eat. He provides water in many different places in many different ways. They go and pretty much go on a straight path back to the land of Canaan. They send out scouts. And among those scouts is a man named Joshua. Joshua and Caleb are two scouts that say, this is the land God has given us. We can take it. But the other scouts are like, oh, those people are too big. They're too strong. They're too powerful. So they convince all of the rest of the people that we don't need to go into that place. We need to wander around the desert for 40 years. So that's what they do. Moses, after being 80 years old when he leads the people out of Egypt, leads the people around in the desert for 40 more years. Because the people didn't trust God. Moses trusted God, except for one time. Did you know that? There's one time when Moses fails to do what God says to do. They're in a place and there's no water. And God tells Moses, speak to that rock over there. Speak to it and water will come forth. But Moses is angry with the people. And instead of speaking to the rock, Moses strikes it. Moses disobeys. And because of his disobedience, God tells him, I'm sorry, but you're not going to get to lead these people into the promised land. You've been leading them for almost 40 years, but you don't get to go in. So Moses leads them on. And Moses is a faithful leader. He's telling the people how to follow God. He's telling the people what to do to be a part of God's people and how to live. And he gives us, did you know? And you probably did because I've told you before. But Moses gives them the two most important commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. Moses shares with them these two commandments. They know. But Moses doesn't get to lead them into the promised land. And this is where our scripture comes in for today. So we're actually going to read a little bit. We're going to read Deuteronomy chapter 34, and then we're going to read part of Joshua chapter 1. Deuteronomy chapter 34 says this, "Then Moses climbed Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab to the top of Pisgah across from Jericho. There the Lord showed him the whole land of Canaan, from Gilead to Dan, all of Naphtali, the territory of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the Mediterranean Sea, the Negev and the whole region from the valley of Jericho, the city of palms as far as Zoar. Then the Lord said to him, 'This is the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when I said, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over into it.' And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in Moab, as the Lord has said. He, the Lord, buried him in Moab, in the valley opposite Beth Peor. But to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Moses was 120 years old when he died. Yet his eyes were not weak, nor his strength gone. The Israelites grieved for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days until the time of weeping and mourning was over. Now, Joshua, son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses laid his hands on him. So the Israelites listened to him and did what the Lord had commanded Moses. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to his whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel." Now for Joshua 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. We've been talking about change and transitions. And if there was ever a transition in Scripture, this is one of them. This is a very obvious transition from a time of wandering in the desert to a time of going into the promised land. So I want to share a few things that happen here that can apply to us as well. You see, transition and change are different. We've talked about this before. Change is the event. Change is the fact that our pastor of 14 years is gone. That's happened. It's over. Transition is the way you deal with it. Transition is the way you deal with moving from one leader to another. Transition is the way you deal with those things that change because of that leadership change. So, what did Joshua do when Moses died? Did Joshua come in and change everything? No. Did Joshua come in and change the law? Did Joshua come in and change and tell the people they had to live differently now? No. Joshua didn't overthrow what Moses had done. In fact, for 30 days they celebrated and mourned Moses. Joshua took what Moses had done and prepared the people for, and he led them in the next steps. You see, when you've had a faithful leader for a long time, they've set you up for good things in the future. It's not necessary to say everything they did was wrong. Now we're going to do it all this way. That's not necessary. In fact, when you've had a faithful leader, it's important for continuity, for the purpose of the church to continue doing things that were right and good. I think of one of David's babies. One of the things that he loves, still talks to me about to this day when I meet with him. And that was the community table, dinner church. David absolutely adored dinner church. I love it. I think it's one of the best ministries going in Greenville. It's a way that we connect with our community. People come into the church who would in no circumstances come into a sanctuary, but they'll come eat a meal and hear a devotion with us. They'll come fellowship with us. They'll sit down at the table and listen to your stories and tell you their own. That's building relationships. That's absolutely essential to being a church. Other things that happened while David was here are the clothes closet and Kor and a lot of things that we continue doing. It's important that we keep those good things going. We don't want to change everything, because those things were and are good. When Joshua came in to lead the people of Israel, he didn't change everything. He took what Moses had been doing and he built on top of that. Now, there were differences. God spoke differently to Joshua Then he spoke to Moses. God didn't speak to Joshua on the mountaintop face to face. God didn't speak to Joshua that way. God spoke to Moses that way. God didn't work through Joshua the same way he worked through Moses. God had to provide for a lot of people in the desert for 40 years through Moses. That's not the way God had to provide for the people of Israel once Joshua took over. They were going into a land that was fertile. They were conquering a land that was already cultivated. They simply had to become faithful in keeping the soil, in tilling and planting and harvesting, in being farmers and shepherds and cowherds and many different things. God spoke through Joshua in different ways. God is going to speak to this church through me and through your next pastor, even if it's not me, in different ways than God spoke through David. God's going to speak differently. The message better be the same. Love God and love people. That better be the message, because that's the message of our faith. The people had to learn to trust Joshua, didn't they? Joshua did things with them that were weird. Do you remember Jericho? They had never conquered a city before. And now Joshua tells them they're going to do it by walking around in circles. The people had to trust that God was telling Joshua what to do. In the future, now and in the future, we're going to have to learn to trust each other. Because we are a congregational church. A church that works together and votes on things together. We are a democratic church. You don't want a pastor who's going to come in and dictate exactly how everything is going to be. You want a pastor who's going to collaborate and work with you and find your gifts and your abilities and your passions and use those to meet people's needs and to meet the needs of the community and to do what God is calling you to. God spoke differently through Joshua, and the people had to learn to trust him. 14 years with one minister is a long time. You learn to listen to his words. You learn what to trust and what not to trust. David was a Cardinals fan, or is a Cardinals fan. He's still a Cardinals fan. I don't know that you can trust his opinion on baseball. I'm just kidding. But when it comes to listening to God and doing things that are good for the church and the community, David wanted what was best for God's kingdom and for this church. And you're going to have to learn to trust somebody else with that same faithfulness. Now, there is a hard job on your pastor search committee to find somebody who will be like that. Because let me tell you, I've been in many, many churches, and I've served under pastors who are not faithful. I've served under pastors who want what's best for them, and they're going to get their own. And they're not going to be faithful in leading the church because they're too worried about themselves. So the pastor search committee has a task in front of them. Pray for them. Hold them up in prayer. Encourage them. Now, the final thing between Moses and Joshua is they had different purposes. And although the major purpose of a pastor is to lead a church and being faithful in a community to show God's love, they may have different ways of doing that and different purposes individually and within the church. Moses' purpose was the rescuing of the people of Israel, leading them out of the land of slavery. He wanted to be the one to lead them into the land of promise, but that became Joshua's purpose. Now, whereas in many of my other points there were one-to-one comparisons, this one doesn't really compare one-to-one with a pastor and a new pastor as well, but it's still a principle to be understood. People have different purposes. My purpose in life is to lead people to worship God. How I do that varies in different places in different ways. But I still feel that draw, that call to work with people who are different than me. Whether that's from a local church perspective and people who are of different economic and social classes, or whether that's going overseas for a little bit of time at a time. I still feel that draw to intercultural, cross-cultural engagement. That's part of my purpose. That was there when I was 14, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. Some people don't have that. Some pastors are very much called to local places, and they don't think outside their location very much. I don't know that that's a failure as much as it is purpose different. But I do think it's important for us to get our minds around the fact that God is a global God. He's bigger than we are. So, in conclusion, there is a great transition between Moses and Joshua. And in their transition, we see some things that we can apply to ourselves. Joshua didn't overthrow what Moses started. God spoke differently to Moses and to Joshua. The people had to learn to trust Joshua just as they had Moses. And Joshua and Moses had different purposes. When you're in the process of transition, remembering that God is in control is absolutely paramount. But remembering that you also have a say in the change, you have a say in the transition, gives it a little bit more gravitas and takes away a little bit of that anxiety. So that's my prayer for you today, that you would remember that you have a say, because we are a democratic congregational church, but also that you would remember that in this time of transition, God is going to work in different ways. God is going to work through different people. And it's not going to be the same. But God may still be leading you to the promised land. God's kingdom is coming into this world whether you want it to or not, because that's what Jesus initiated with his death and resurrection, is God's kingdom here on earth. It looks different in different places. It seems and feels different because we all make up God's kingdom. And because as we do that, we bring our gifts and our abilities and our passions and our talents, and we make up God's kingdom together. So I implore you, continue to be involved. Come out to everything you can come out to, because we want your fellowship and because you are part of God's kingdom here at First Baptist Greenville. This place has a future because God's kingdom is not done. Amen. So we're going to have a short time of invitation. I would encourage you to come talk to me if you have anything on your heart. Not that I'm special. Me praying for you doesn't give you a direct access to God. Jesus did that for you. You have direct access to God even without me. But if you feel like you need to share something with someone, if you feel like you need encouragement or love, I'm here to love you. So as this song plays, if you have any reason to come down front, I will be down front to receive you. It's going to be a short song. And then we'll pray our benediction.